put him feel shorter. I don't know if somebody dropped it down or what. We're going to start a new series up here upstairs. Introduced it a couple weeks ago when Dwayne was out. Is this a little too loud? Sounds a little too loud. When Dwayne was out. But we're going to recap a little bit of those things and then get into our study. The motivation behind this was me finally picking up and starting to read Brumback's History of the Church Through the Ages, which I found very interesting, very intriguing. If you haven't read it, I would recommend it. It will cause you to consider the New Testament scriptures in a different light, understanding the history a little bit better. So I would encourage that. He is a man, though, so don't consider that or take that as gospel, inspired word. But I do think he has a good perspective, and it's worth your time. I want to start with a reading this morning, and it's one that everybody's very familiar with. In Matthew chapter 16, verse 13, Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi. And where's that at? Everybody, do you remember where Caesarea Philippi is located? In the north. It's just on the northeast shore of the Sea of Galilee. So he was up there, which is where he spent most of his time in that area. He asked his disciples, saying, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, and others Jeremiah, one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered and said to him, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered and said to him, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it." I thought that was a good introductory passage to get us started back on this study here. This is the class outline that we're going to take over the next 3 months, 4 months, however long it takes to go through. We're going to talk today a little bit about the historical background. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the establishment of the church. We'll probably get into that next week. Beginning in the year 33 AD, when Christ was crucified, he told the apostles to tarry in Jerusalem until they were endued with spirit from on high, from the Lord, and then they would begin the church there in Jerusalem and spread it out after that in the dispersion following on. And notice that I'd like to point out that all of the time that we're going to be studying after today is all in the AD section, which means what? In Latin, means the year of our Lord. So even today, 2,000 years later, we measure time, whether you believe in Jesus or not, we mark our time in the year of our Lord, Jesus Christ. So let's talk a little bit about some of that historical background. We got into it a little bit, and Bob asked a good question last week whenever he wanted to know the difference between in the Roman Empire. What's the difference between the Roman Empire and those Caesars and those kings and the Republic and the Senate and things like that? Basically, Rome began with a monarchy. I think it was around 733 B.C., you may have heard of some of the writings, not the writings, but some of the stories of Romulus and Remus. Romulus is the man who was believed to have started the city of Rome. It was just a small city, and he was kind of the ruler of that town and began to enlarge the borders and became an heir or a line of monarchy. Next, we have the Republic. And then finally, we have the Empire. Later on, we find that the empire was divided. But it's in the Republic, Bob, that you were asking about, where we had the Senate, and it was Romulus, around 750 B.C., that established this colony, and he decided that he was going to choose 300 of the nobility. the wise people, the wealthy people in that area, to serve and kind of rule over the people. Later on in the Republic, beginning in 509 BC, we find that he set up two consuls. Two consuls, or generals, as they wanted to expand their territory, and put them in place in that Senate, or that group of 300 people, to lead the government. And groups of magistrates and others operated under these two consuls. They were the patricians and the plebeians. And you can kind of guess which is the ruling class of the wealthy and which is kind of the run-of-the-mill daily folk that did all the hard work. And the Senate would elect a dictator in times of war, because they had the two groups. The Senate would elect a dictator to take charge and take over for the sake of unity. A big event that happened up here in the Republic, as we're looking at it, was in 168 BC. And again in 146 BC, these were two important decisive battles. In 168 BC, the Romans defeated the Grecians at the Battle of Perseus, and then again in 146 at the Battle of Corinth. Two major decisive victories between Rome and the Greek empire that was growing, where Rome put them down and became the leaders of the time. When Rome defeated Greece at that battle of Corinth, they gained control over Macedonia as well as Palestine, all of the Judea area, and that's our influence on the Jewish people and later on Christ and his coming. As we skip forward a little bit more, probably the last thing in the Republic is of note is in 63 BC, Pompey comes into the picture, and he was a general and a ruler that worked with the Senate as well in expanding the borders. There were problems in Jerusalem. There were several sects. We know of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, but there were at least one other group. The Essenes is a big one. Pharisees being the ones that were... we won't get into the difference on all the Pharisees and the Sadducees and everything, but the Jewish Pharisee, there was a leader by the name of John Hyrcanus II. He was the son of John Hyrcanus, and up on the line was the grandson of Matthias, who began the Hasmonean dynasty. But John Hyrcanus had a brother, and his name was Aristobulus II. They were the rulers of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and they could not get along in Jerusalem. So Pompey decided to send one of his generals down to say, "You guys need to knock it off. We're the Romans, we're in charge of everything. I don't want people down here causing problems." So he sends his general down, and in 3 months, they settle things. They basically destroy Jerusalem, and he sets the elder Hyrcanus up as the leader at that time. He was a weaker man, but he was best to ally himself with Rome. And he would allow him to become an independent king of that region. In 49 through 44 BC, tailing at the end of the Republic here, we have Julius Caesar, which I'm sure you're familiar with in the writings of Shakespeare, and his demise. And shortly after that, in 27, taking over from him, the Senate conferred upon Gaius Julius Caesar, his adopted son, the title of Augustus. And the Empire of Rome was now established. Augustus Caesar was the first empire of Rome. So that's where we began in 27 BC. From there on, we have a lineage, and I've got them listed there for you, of the empires, the emperors of the Roman Empire, beginning with Augustus Caesar the First. Any questions so far? I didn't spend a whole lot of time on the monarchy and the republic because I didn't think it was particularly relevant. It's more relevant whenever we get into the emperors, because that is the time of Christ. We're looking at 27 BC to 14 AD. Jesus was born under the rule of Augustus Caesar. He was born Gaius Octavius, but he dropped the name after being adopted by his great uncle Julius Caesar. He had the memorable struggle with Mark Antony and Cleopatra, his wife, and the Senate finally pronounced him the emperor in 27. He did honor the will of Herod the Great. You'll remember at the In the Jewish rule, we had Herod the Great, and he had several sons, three or four, depending on who you want to follow. But Augustus honored the will of Herod the Great, who was down in Jerusalem, and said, "When you die, I'm comfortable with it being split up into a tetrarchy or four rulers in that area." This is the period of Rome that many historians refer to as the Pax Romana. A lot of expansion. They secured the borders. They had good roads. And Rome was at peace. Most people were subject, and there was not a lot of revolting. Augustus needed somebody to take over for him. And he didn't have an heir directly under him that would work. And so he brought up Tiberius, who was Augustus's like second or third wife. And keep in mind that all of these emperors of Rome had multiple wives. They had many divorces. Sometimes they murdered their spouses so that they could marry somebody else. They killed off some of their sons so they could choose a different son and adopt him because he was a better general. And this happened all the time in the Roman Empire. And Tiberius was one of those. His mother had divorced Nero and was married to Augustus Caesar. So he was the stepson, really, of Augustus Caesar. He came to power and he didn't even want to become the emperor, really, in the beginning. He had to divorce his wife, who he loved, and he had to marry Augustus Caesar's daughter, Julia. And so it was an arranged marriage. He didn't really want to do it, but he became the emperor anyway. That was in 14 to 37 A.D. So now we're talking really when Christ is coming up and gaining notoriety down in Judea. Tiberius, as he came up, he was not well liked by the people after about 7 months into the office. There was revolt up in the north, up around the France area and Gaul. And so he sent one of his best generals, who was his nephew, Germanicus, up to put out the dispute up north. Germanicus was successful. All the people in Rome flocked to him and thought, we should make him the new emperor. And so he killed off him and the rest of his family. And the only person that was left out of Germanicus's family was a guy by the name of Caligula, which was his nickname, Germanicus' son. And at a little age, he wasn't very old, probably up to his dad's knee, went to battle and went to war with his father up in Gaul and Germania. And the soldiers all called him Caligula, which meant little boots. So that's where we get his name. Caligula was adopted by Tiberius, like we see that Tiberius was brought into the family by Augustus Caesar. We find mention of his name. Would somebody read Luke chapter 3, verse 1? Okay, thanks, Tad. So here we have direct mention in the scriptures of Tiberius, Caesar Tiberius, who is in rule at that time of Christ. Now, I want you to look closely here in Luke chapter 3. We have the division I mentioned earlier of Judea and the Tetrarchy. 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, Pontius Pilate, and we are all familiar with him, the governor of Judea, Herod being the Tetrarch of Galilee. So there's one. We've got Herod, his brother Philip, Lysanias, and we're missing one other. So there's three sons. This last son, Lysanias, I'm not quite for sure how you pronounce it, is left out by many historians, but the author of Luke includes him in there, being the fourth of the sons of the great Herod. Herod the Great was a very large man as well. Many people said that he was so large that he couldn't leave the temple, and he certainly couldn't ride a horse. And so most of his rule and reign over Jerusalem and the temple was from his window because he was such a large man. We've also got the comment when Jesus, when he is questioned by some of the teachers of the day, well, do you pay taxes to Caesar? What was Christ's response? Right. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is the Lord's. This is who he was speaking of. Render unto Tiberius what is Tiberius's. It's his money. It's got his face on it. I didn't put up here some of the images, but all of these emperors had busts and statues made of them, and they all had coins that had their picture on them. They were pretty arrogant men as well. In the East, part of the Roman Empire, emperors could not be worshipped until they had died. In Rome, however, an emperor could be worshipped while he still lived. An interesting comment. It was also Tiberius, the last thing on him. In 19 AD, we find him sending out an order for all Jews who were of fighting age to enlist in the Roman army. This was one of the first decrees that really brought some of the opposition between the Roman Empire and the Jewish people. All right, so Tiberius, Caligula, the little boy, little boots, that came up under him and was adopted. He is remembered for his cruelty, his arrogance, and his sexual perversion. He had a horse that was famous. Anybody ever heard of his horse? The horse of Caligula? All right. It's Incitatus, I believe was its name. He dressed his horse up in gold and silver garments. He had it in a marble stall. He made it one of the counselors of Rome. And he made people worship his horse. And somebody made a comment at one point in time to him that, oh yeah, you're going to become emperor whenever you can ride a horse from this island to this island. So whenever he became emperor, he had a moat built from one island to the other so he could ride his horse across it. A very pretentious man. He suffered an illness only after 7 months of being the emperor, and many people believe that this illness was so great that it caused a mental breakdown to him and really saw a change in his mentality and his attitude toward all the people. A lot of people called him mad, and some of his cruelty because of that mental collapse. He was the first Roman emperor to be assassinated. John Fox said that Caligula, and we read the Fox's Book of Martyrs, John Fox said that Caligula was so wicked that he commanded himself to be worshipped as God and temples to be built in his name. In 40 AD, he ordered a statue of himself to be erected in the Jerusalem temple. I want a statue of me put in the temple in Jerusalem. See how the Jews like that. That was just his attitude. And so he told one of his generals to go down there and make it happen. I'm trying to think of his name. Petronius. He sent Petronius down to Jerusalem and said, you're going to erect a statue of me in the Jerusalem temple. Petronius was a fair-minded man, and when all the Jews cried out and said, anywhere else but the temple, he listened to him. And he sent a letter back to Caligula in Rome and said, I think we ought to reconsider putting your statue up in the temple. And it infuriated Caligula, and he sent some of his messengers to go back down and to kill Petronius. Unfortunately, on the way from Rome back down to Jerusalem, they had a huge storm on the Mediterranean Sea, and they had to disband, and they were delayed for a period of 3 months. It was during that 3 months that Caligula was assassinated as well. So, if those men would have made it from Rome down to Jerusalem, this man, Petronius, would have been killed, and they would have put the statue inside the temple in Jerusalem. Could this be what is referenced in Mark chapter 13, verse 14? Somebody read that. This is in 40 AD, so 7 years after Christ has died.
When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel, prophet standing where it ought not, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains.
Okay. So some people, and there's no way to know exactly what the intent is on this, but some people have referenced that this is the statue of Caligula being placed in the temple in Jerusalem. When you see this strong Roman presence and occupation in the temple, that's where you need to start making plans to get out of here. Just one of many.
destruction of Jerusalem.
Okay.
This whole passage, which would have been later on, about 60 AD.
66 AD is when things began, when Vespasian came down to take over Jerusalem. You're right. But this is all kind of one and the same. This is Rome and the Roman Empire exerting its will and its way and its religion of paganism and polytheism into the Jewish culture. Christ knew it was going to happen. The apostles knew it was going to be coming. They wrote of this and warned them to be prepared for these things.
Don't you believe that a lot of this is the history we're going through is by the providence of God? Because, like you mentioned it, the Roman Empire set up a perfect environment, atmosphere for Christ to be born in and for all this to happen.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit 2 weeks ago. Is, you know, of all the period of time that we've had in existence, why did God choose this moment in time to bring Christ into the world? You know, some of it, maybe it's because the persecution, the conditions were just right. You know, Rome had established a great network of cities and travel and commerce, and it was easy for the gospel to spread at this time. The inscriptions, the writing, you know, we're not going to really know exactly why God chose this time until, Lord willing, we meet Him and can find out later down the road. Many, many Christians were martyred under the reign of Caligula from 37 to 41 A.D.
I think something else that's happened in recent years that shows that God does not recognize the Jewish nation as His people anymore. One, obviously, is back here where we just read, where it happened that Jerusalem was destroyed, the Romans took over. What's standing now where the temple used to stand?
The mosque.
Islamic mosque.
Dome of the mosque.
God has allowed that to happen. That shows, that's just one of the things that shows me that, you know, the Jewish nation was done when Christ started the church. The old law was over with then. And there's many people in the world, many, many people, that just can't accept that.
We're talking about the Roman Empire right now. After we finish them, we're going to overlap a little bit and see what was happening in the Grecian Empire and then the Jewish rulers. As Dad said, you know, we had this long line of Jewish leadership as well. And, you know, I kind of take that the independence of the Jews as a nation ceased whenever Rome took control in about 160 B.C. when they took over. They had their own little rulers that were set up, but they always had to report up to Caesar. Claudius was the next. Claudius was much better to the Christians than Caligula was. At one time down in Egypt, down in Alexandria, there was a dispute between the Greeks and the Jews. And word reached Rome, and it reached Caligula, and so there's a letter in history called the Letter to the Alexandrians. After riding between the Jews and the Greeks, the letter reaffirms the Jewish rites in that city and said, "Let the Jews practice and worship to their God, to Jehovah God." But one thing it did forbid is them to meet in public masses, large groupings of them to either move into the area or to worship together in large groups to try to keep that rioting down. Somebody read Acts 11:28. Under the reign of Claudius here.
There stood up one of them named Agabus, and testified by the Spirit that there had been a great dearth throughout all the world, which came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar.
Okay, so Claudius takes charge in 41. Shortly thereafter in his reign, there's a massive drought that comes across. And it's referenced here in Acts chapter 11, verse 28. What did the church do when there was a large drought at that time? What was going on in Jerusalem? They did. The churches helped each other. The church in Jerusalem was suffering severely during this drought of Claudius's reign. And so the church at Antioch decided to help out by doing what? They sent relief. They took up a collection, and who did they send it to Jerusalem with? Barnabas and Saul, or Paul. Exactly. All right. So there's the overlap of Claudius. Now, Nero is one of those emperors that many of you have probably heard a little bit more about. Before we go to him, I have one more quick thing. Somebody read Acts 18:2. Sorry about that. The date, I believe, to be around 49 A.D. Acts 18:2.
There he met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome.
Okay, so Claudius wasn't killing the Christians. He basically said, I don't want you to gather in large groups and cause riots. So basically, he let them leave Rome under their own free will. As Karen said, we find Priscilla and Aquila leaving Rome and meeting up with Paul. At this time, I don't know if there was a distinction in the Roman mind between a Jew and a Christian, because the edict was to get rid of all the Jews out of town. And we find Priscilla and Aquila leaving, but at that time, they would have already been converted and be Christians. So in the Roman eyes, I think that they still believed that Christians and Jews were of the same. But if you were a Jew, if you were a Christian, you knew that there was a distinction between the two at this time in 49 A.D. Last thing I'll mention on Claudius is he was a good friend of Herod Agrippa, the son of Herod the Great. And that comes into play a little bit later. Let's look at Nero, 54 through 68. He was proclaimed the emperor of Rome at the age of 17. Wasn't very old. He was pretty athletic and good looking. He entered the Olympics. And for some reason, he won every single event that he entered. I guess when you're the emperor, that's what happens. He was young when he became the emperor, like I said. And his mother really influenced a lot of his decisions. She had his ear and she kind of led him in the path that she thought he should go. Seneca and Burrus were two of his advisors. And Seneca and Burrus had problems with his mother as well. He finally got fed up with everybody telling him what to do and he started killing all of them. He even killed his mother. He married several women. One of his favorite wives died, and he was sad about that. So he had a young boy castrated and married him because he looked like his wife that had died. This is the type of sexual perversion that we see of an emperor of Rome. He had his big problems. So one of the common things that you're probably heard of is the Great Fire of Rome in 64 A.D., most historians believe that it was Nero himself that ordered or started the fire in Rome. It burned about 70% of the city. 10 of the 14 districts, I believe, were burned. Most people believe that he started that fire so he could create a new expansive palace for himself. He needed more room, and Rome was getting crowded. Let's burn it off and just build me a new complex on which to build my city. And so when everybody cried out and said, you're the one that burned the city, who do you think he blamed?
Jews.
Oh, it's those Jews. They're causing problems in Rome again. They don't want to worship me. They don't want to worship Caesar or my image. They're the ones that started the fire. This is probably one of the biggest periods of intense persecution against the Christians, particularly in Rome under Nero. He hated them. This is what we're going to find in several of the early historians, that he would capture the Christians and he would put them in his garden and burn them at night to illuminate his garden. Most people believe that Paul was beheaded under Nero and that Peter was crucified upside down under Nero's reign. Again, there were problems in Jerusalem while Nero was the emperor. And so he sent his most able general down to squash the revolt down there. Again, between the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Roman occupation. And he sent a general by the name of Vespasian down to deal with that. And that was in 67 AD. And that is the beginning of a big period in Jewish history of the first Jewish-Roman War. Between 60 to 67 AD to 70 AD when the temple was destroyed, we had a lot of fighting and a lot of conflict between the Romans and the Jews. Nero, as I said, he was a very pretentious man. He had another leader down in Spain, Hispania, out in that area, named Galba, who I believe is our next emperor. Galba was growing in popularity out in Spain, and everybody really liked him. And when word made it to Nero that Galba was growing and potentially growing an army to take the empire, Nero panicked. He didn't know what to do. He was afraid. And so he ran out of town and was hidden. And when he heard when Galba's forces were coming in, he had his secretary stab him to death. So, in a sense, he committed suicide as well. So that was Nero. Nero was a very artsy type of a guy as well. He liked to enjoy the plays. He liked to be in them himself. He liked to sing, and he liked to play the lyre. And so that's that term that when Rome burned, that Nero fiddled, or the other way around. There weren't any fiddles at that time anyway. It would have been the lyre. But most people did say, the historians at that time, did say that he was singing while Rome did burn. His last famous dying words were, "What an artist dies in me," whenever he had himself murdered. Galba started the year of the four emperors. So he was the one from Spain that came up and took the throne after Nero. He only lasted a few months. Otho was next, and then after him, Vitellus was after him. Four emperors in 1 year. Pretty quick. After that, we begin the Flavian dynasty of Vespasian, Titus, and Domitian. They were all father-son lineage. Vespasian was the one that went down to Jerusalem under the order of Nero and took care of the city. Titus finally finished the work of the destruction of Jerusalem. Then we have the five good emperors, beginning with Nero, Trajan, Hadrian, and so on and so forth. That's all we're going to do on the emperors of Rome. Emperors of Rome in 20 minutes. Any questions? So the big ones to keep in mind, Jesus was born under Augustus Caesar during the Pax Romana, a fairly calm time. Tiberius came up, was forced to marry his daughter, wasn't a very good ruler, but really didn't persecute the Christians a whole lot. Then we find Gaius Caligula was one that really started the persecutions up right after the death of Christ. Claudius was pretty good. He let the Jews do their own thing. And then Nero was absolutely terrible and murdered many, many Christians.
What's outstanding to me is that about 20 years after Christ died, that there was really a peaceful situation throughout the whole empire and allowed all these evangelists to go and spread the gospel so quickly.
Yeah, so how many churches were established? I mean, we have a number of them recorded in the scriptures, but you know, there's probably other little ones that were here and there that weren't huge, large cities like Corinth and Antioch. Doug?
I've always found it interesting that in most probability, high likelihood, that the book of Romans was written to the church of Rome during the time of Nero, when he was ruling. So knowing some things about him and some of the things that were going on in Rome at that time kind of helps shed a little bit more interest into some of the things that he writes to the people there and the things they're having to deal with.
Good point. Any other comments? Bob?
Question. The gladiators and the Christians being killed in the Colosseum, did that end under one of those people?
Yeah, so the Colosseum was started under Nero. It wasn't finished, though, until Vespasian and Titus's time. When Vespasian destroyed Jerusalem, he brought back 70,000 Jews and a lot of the money of the temple and used that to finish the work of the Colosseum and brought the Jews up to finish the building of it. And after the Jews built it, then they got thrown inside of it and were destroyed by the animals. I even read in one place that in another stadium, Nero was so upset that the animals weren't killing the people inside that he had the Praetorian Guard which was set up by Augustus Caesar back generations before, that he had the Praetorian Guard come over to a section of the crowd, basically in their pews, and threw them all into the pit. That's just how terrible of a guy he was.
Didn't the throwing the Christians in the Colosseum end by a certain...
I'll have to get into a little bit. I would say that it probably ended with Domitian, and beginning with Nerva, that probably subsided some. I haven't read on it specifically, so I'd have to do a little bit more reading on when that Colosseum fighting ended.
There is a story connected to that that's related to Christians. I'm sure you'll find it when you look it up.
Go ahead.
But it's about as the story goes, there was two gladiators fighting in the Colosseum, and there was a Christian elder around, and he tried to go in and stop them, and the gladiators killed the elder. And from that point forward, people wouldn't come to the Colosseum anymore.
Hmm.
That's a really grossly abbreviated version.
I hadn't got that. Where was it in? Do you remember?
I don't know.
Okay. I think it's... We rang about 10 after... The Greek Empire, there's not a lot on it. This goes back pretty early. We learn of Alexander the Great in the 4th and 5th centuries B.C. that ruled and really spread the Greek Empire and the Greek culture. And then we have the Hellenistic period of the Greek Empire leading up to. The Hellenistic period saw the Greek Empire divided into three regions, kind of the Greco-Macedonian, that was pretty close. The Seleucids, which was a little bit further east, you think of Syria and Western Asia, and the Ptolemaic, which was Egypt. So Jerusalem, under the Greek Hellenistic period and under Greek rule, was subject to the Seleucid Empire just above them in Syria and Western Asia. Antiochus IV Epiphanes had a good part in the role. We'll talk about him in the Jewish part of things. We'll talk a little bit about the Jewish rulers next week. We're not going to do much on David, Solomon, Rehoboam, or Jeroboam. We know about the captivity, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Greco-Roman control of the area. The Hasmonean dynasty began by... Matthias, I think is how you pronounce his name. He was the one who started the Maccabees, I believe around 160 B.C. is when he started that. That ruled for several years, until we get to Herod the Great, who set up the Tetrarchy amongst his sons. And Herod was a good friend of the Roman Empire, like some of his sons were, and they kept that position because they knew that if they revolted against Rome, that it would be their head. Any questions on history today? All right. So that's our historical background. We'll finish it next week, and then we'll jump back into the very establishment of the church in 33 AD by Christ and go from there. Thanks.